This is episode 131 of Drunk on Comics, brought to you by InkWhiskey.com.
So back to the comic book store today.
Yeah, it's convenient that the comic book store happens to be right down by another shop that my girlfriend has to go to. And I think I'm going to try and convince her to go get lunch at the cheesesteak place next door.
I've wanted to go there.
Yeah.
So glad I'm tagging along.
Yeah, because we've got to go to the comic book store, the olive oil store, the cheesesteak store, and we might go to the margarita store, too.
Oh, that would be good.
Yeah. That's actually on the docket, at least the margaritas. Well, for her. I'm not doing margaritas.
They're good.
Yeah, I get brain freezes.
Oh, yeah.
I would rather just drink quickly.
And just do the shots?
Yeah.
Tequila.
Yeah, so, Tony, I have some news for you.
You do?
This isn't our normal news segment, but this is newsworthy and it needs to be brought to the attention right at the front of the show.
Okay.
Our awesome sponsors, InkWhiskey.com, who they make the concealable entertainment flasks that, for those of you that haven't seen them, go to InkWhiskey.com and check them out because they look like the old retro NES cartridges. We knew a while back about Kegaman.
Yep.
You know, and we actually had one of those. There's the new Collector's Pack Round 2 is out. So there's... Including Kegaman, there are 5 new titles available.
What are those titles?
Spike Dyson's Pass Out. Tetraquila.
Nice.
Ninja Dry Gin.
Okay.
And the one that our good buddy Chris came up with when I was talking to him, because what was my game on Nintendo? Do you remember me talking about this?
God, man, that's so long ago.
Final Fantasy.
Okay. Wow, I didn't know you liked that.
That was my game. I have more hours logged on that game than any other game probably ever. They now have Fine Ale Fantasy.
So you're going to have to go and buy that one now, aren't you?
I am. But yeah, so those are the 5 new ones. But I wanted to bring it up because I actually saw this last week after we were done recording. I was like, shit! But I wanted to kind of hold back and do the big grand announcement on the show.
That is pretty sweet, and it is cool that they're, you know, having more than just the original 5 that they had.
Yeah, with Drunk Hunt, Castle Vodka, Metal Beer, Super Bar Hop Bros, and Legend of Drink.
Yep.
Yeah, so lots of fun. And actually, you can get all 5 of these for $85 if you buy the collector's pack.
So it's cheaper than doing them individually.
Yeah, because they're $20 a pop. So, you know, it's basically you're getting one almost for free. So go buy them. I wonder if they've got something, you know, even bigger for, you know, if you bought all 10.
We'll have to do some digging around and find out if there's a special code or something to try to do that.
Especially like up, up, down, down. That would be awesome if that's their, like, you know, their special promo code is up, up, down, down, left, right, BA, start.
That would be the best badass fucking code for any website. Like, don't just type in, you know, DOC20 or something like that. No, actually do the Konami code.
Yeah. So, all right. Anyway, shall we get into shit?
Yeah, let's get into some stuff. And how about you start?
All right. You know, it really doesn't matter which one I use for... you know, I think I'm going to do this. Well, because
they're interchangeable.
Well, both of my books are creator owned stuff today, so it didn't really matter which one I'm doing for Indie Turnpike versus off the shelf. But actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I think Manifest Destiny number 12. This is a book that both Kevin and I have been reading, and that we've talked about a few times. And honestly, I think this one really needs to be at the start of the show. Now that I'm thinking about it, because remember how much I loved Rasputin and the fact that it was one of those tales that had very few words in it, and the art told the story? This is actually the exact opposite of that. This is a very, very wordy book. This is written by Chris Dinges. Art on this, at least pencils and inks, are by Matthew Roberts, and colors are by Owen Gianni. And you know, you sit down to read this book, Tony, and I mean, I'll just open it up so you can kind of see a little bit, because you haven't seen one of these in a while. And there are a couple nice splash pages, but you'll notice that
those be words.
It's a very dialogue heavy and monologue heavy book in here, and I mean
I love when books have more dialogue. You get more, you know, more story pretty much, because you get to read more about the characters. Except when sometimes I'm just like, man, I don't want to read so much. I want to look at the pictures.
Well, you know, and this is a nice one too, just because of the fact that you can have a problem. This is one of those where there isn't something that Dinges is putting into the monologue, the inner monologue, or the dialogue that could be expressed through the art, but it's just too wordy. This is, you know, a great example of, this is a great example of a book where they complement each other so beautifully, just like Rasputin did, where you have, you know, very little as far as the dialogue or monologue, but the story is still being told. It's such a fine line to do that with, that where you can come across a book like this. And I really wanted to bring it up. But for those of you that don't know about Manifest Destiny, I'll kind of give you a little bit of a background. You know, if perchance you are a brand new listener, which thank you if you are. And to all those that have been listening for a long time, thank you for that too.
Thanks.
Yeah, that's our way of sucking up. And it also gives me a chance to go cheers and I can drink some beer. So anyway.
Like you need an excuse to drink more.
I know. this book is following Lewis and Clark back in the 1800s as they're going across, you know, the new territory that America had just purchased from France. As they're going across, they're encountering all kinds of flora and fauna that we aren't really all that familiar with. Things that are like buffalo on the, like buffalo man on the top with a horse's body.
Okay.
They aren't quite minotaurs. They're just something completely different. To like these giant, like, you know, river monsters, to all different kinds of things that they're coming in contact.
Started to make me just think of Oregon Trail. No wonder they shot so many buffaloes.
Yeah, well, they're going across, and they're not only trying to discover these, but they're supposed to actually be killing any of these things that are a threat, so that America can actually expand. You know, on there, Sacagawea is with them, and this issue. You finally get a little bit more about her in there. Now, for this one too, and I'm going to tell you this flat out: if you haven't been reading this book, it's going to be not the easiest thing in the world to just pick it up, but if you have half a brain, you can understand enough what's going on, because Chris Dinges does a nice job of just kind of explaining enough of situations to where, you know, even for as many books as we read, sometimes it's like you're picking up an issue, it's been a month, maybe two, and you're like, oh God, where'd this leave off? And this does a nice job of just giving you the subtle hints without hitting you over the head. Like, see last issue, asshole, bang. You know, this gives you the subtle hints in the books to go, oh, okay, yeah. But I don't know what it is about this book. You're not, like, there's not a lot of talk about this book on the market right now. But it's at issue 12. It's still selling. They're carrying a fair number of copies of it in my comic shop, so I'm assuming it's got to be selling decent enough. Mm-hmm. But you don't hear a whole lot of buzz about this book.
Oh, yeah. The only time I ever hear about it is through you.
Yeah, or Kevin.
Yeah. So we are the ones that are really promoting this book. Publishers, listen to us. You can hire us at...
Yeah. But I don't know. This is one of those books, which I think this is a perfect example of how a comic can be entertaining, it can be subtle, and it is just consistently good month after month after month. There has not been a bad issue yet. The art in here by Matthew Roberts, you know, at first it was a little bit different style, and I wasn't quite sure exactly how to, what I felt about it. But I liked it, but there was just something there where I was like, I don't know. I don't know if his art is just consistently getting better or if I'm just learning to appreciate it more, but this book is really, really beautiful too. I mean, there's a lot of subtleties in here as well, and the colors in here by Jenny as well really do a great job, you know, on some of those splash pages where you do get to see a monster here or there. You know, it just, it has a very, very natural feel to it, which this book I think should, especially being that, you know, it's in the Pacific, you know, Northwest and the brand new territories that they're exploring. So anyway, guys, give this book a shot. I'd highly recommend just go pick up the trades.
Well, just, it seems like very interesting, as you were saying, you know, everyone knows the story, but you know, this is the hidden tales of what really happened.
Yeah. Well, you know, it deals with adult issues, too. I mean, there's some indiscretions that are performed in here, you know, in different issues, that are definitely adult themed. I mean, there is a reason that they bagged this book at my shop, and it's not obscene, you know, there's not like major gore. There's really no major, I would put this at a PG-13, I guess, bordering on R, you know, but there's, you know, there's no nudity. There's no graphic violence. That's just senseless in it, but it's an intelligent book, and I think that's why I enjoy it the most, because when you sit down, you get sucked into this book and you're there, and when it ends, every time I'm like, damn it, I'm ready for the next issue. So yeah, Manifest Destiny, guys, give it a shot.
All right, for my review, what I want to do is just take everything you just said and switch out the title, because it's almost word for word what I would say for my book as well.
Well, that'd be plagiarism, Tony.
unlike your book, which comes out in a timely fashion, the struggle is real for me. Because looking back on it, the first one of these, Sandman Overture number 1, came out October 30th of 2013. And it was supposed to be bi-monthly, so you knew it was going to come out every other month.
Or it could come out twice a month, because bi-monthly means both.
Oh, yeah.
I hate that.
Yeah.
I hate bi-monthly, bi-weekly, bi-annually. No.
By now.
Yeah, just every other month or twice a month, you can say that.
Number 3 came out back in July. It is now December, and we got issue 4. That's the only bad thing I'm going to say, because get it together. I want to finish this story.
Is this the one with the eyes and the teeth?
With the Corinthian and everything. Well, that's just one character that they had in the one book. I mean, overall, Sandman is Dream. He is the person that walks the realm of the dream world, along with his siblings, Destruction, Desire, Death, the main Destiny, Despair. They are the endless. They will always be here. There will always be dreams, regardless of... This is a very... Going back to what you said, your review, there's words, but then there are just pages that are just beautifully done. And I know that was one of the big reasons why this has been so delayed, is just some of the art. But on an almost metaphysical scale, when you try to follow what's going on and just seeing some of the art and how things blend into this and that...
I'm actually thinking that this would be... From looking at the pictures, that this book would be better served for people that listen to LSD on comics than drunk on
comics. Fuck yeah. I mean, J.H. Williams, just the art is just the colors, the everything on every page just is so scary but beautiful.
Is he doing the colors too? Is he doing?
Yeah, he's doing everything. Oh,
wow. Okay.
And if you've lived under a rock your whole life, this is written by Neil Gaiman, and this is
who?
Neil Gaiman. And this is the almost the prequel to his giant opus of the Sandman series, which. So when you know when the first Sandman starts, that he had just been kind of in a war and trying to get his things back, how did he lose, I think it was his mask, his dust, and a gem. This one in particular, and one of the things with dreaming that you have to realize, everything is sentient in the world. Things are very interesting and weird, and I can't not use the word so much, metaphysical, spiritual, out-of-body experience, because in here you have stars, like neutrons, like real stars, like the sun, that have a life. They are alive, so stars dream. Obviously, they are in one place, but when you're in the dream world, it's kind of like Professor X, you know, going into his state, mind state, and whatever. Kind of like that, but the dream world is controlled by Dream and Morpheus, Sandman, and he has full reign there. And one of the things that this talks about is how he's, when he first woke up, because there's a new dream now, and this is going to be way over your head, Derek, but although they're endless, the manifestation of them can die, but there will always be a dream. There will always be a Morpheus.
Well, we talked about that, though, like in one of the previous issues where there's multiple versions of them, too.
Yeah, depending on, yeah, who's dreaming of what and this and that, but they are all one and the same, just they're different aspects that... He never knew that he could really talk to himself before, but now he's finding out he can do that.
Brings new meaning to being your own best friend.
I'm going to go play with myself on the playground.
Not like that, Tony. Not like that. This is not an X-rated show.
One of the big shockers in here, which unfortunately my brother hasn't read this yet, but he's just...
Well, that's fine, because you're not going to spoil it for him. He doesn't listen to the podcast when he's not on it. So.
Was actually seeing Morpheus talking to his dad. And like I said, throughout the entire Sandman series, you never really knew where these people came from. They just have always been. They've always been there. They will be the last things within the universe before it dies. And he goes to talk to his dad for help, and one simple thing that he says is, have you talked to Mom? And his dad's like, I don't want to help you. Last time I did this, you know, kind of being an asshole dad. You don't know the name. You don't know what he is. Father Time, whatever. You see some of the physical paintings of, like, him becoming an old man and then becoming young again. So I almost feel like he is this version of Time. He's just there, and that's all powerful, especially with some of the dialogue with Morpheus saying, you know, us being in this microsecond of, you know, time talking. The biggest part for me with this, actually some of the cool things to point out is when you read it, you really need to look at everything. But then when you're reading a page and then you have to physically turn your comic book upside down to follow the painting, the drawing, and that happens on multiple pages, or you read it one way, the dialogue box is upside down, and then it goes one way and the other way, where you are interacting with your book really makes this an overall experience to read.
That's actually like one of those, Trillium did that, the Jeff mm-hmm. Lemire book from Vertigo here a while back, where you actually had to flip the pages, the book upside down, you know, to read it, and that made it really confusing at times, but
Yes, but at the same point, too, you will never forget that experience of, I mean, most people will read the book, it's in your hand, but if you're moving it all around, like mm-hmm. it's a roller coaster, you kind of say, wow, that was different, that's going to stick with me. Where this story is going, I don't want it to end, and with two issues left, maybe next December we will review issue 6, the way they're coming out. This ends on a note that it's confusing how they're going to wrap up all this within the next two issues, but I don't want this to end. And I cannot say enough for Neil Gaiman and for how he writes, but this character in particular, and just fucking Williams' beautiful colors and everything on these pages. It's a work of art.
Yay, art. All right. Well, we should actually move on to some real news today.
Okay.
The one that actually has me probably the most excited out of all of this is that in 2015, Archie's getting a new makeover. You know,
going to the salon and
call it a reboot, if you will. But you know, this is it's more of an overhaul. And basically, what Archie Comics are doing is that they're bringing in Mark Waid to write the book, which you know most people are probably most well known right now for Daredevil, but he's done tons of different things out there. And Fiona Staples is going to be drawing it, and you know everybody knows her from Saga. My only concern is that Fiona has been doing exclusively Saga, and is this going to be a delay? Because I don't know what her production capabilities are. You know, I don't know if maybe they have enough books pushed out, you know, into the future that she can devote some of this time to it. But that's why there's always kind of those little hiatuses, or they hiati.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Or they may start having guest artists, colorists, and everything on.
Well, not on Saga.
You know.
No, they.
Oh yeah, because that is their. Yeah.
Yeah, they both agreed to that, but yeah, so.
I the picture that I seen, it makes them look more
real.
Well, yeah, more like because they are very cartoony, and not to you know get feedback of well everything's cartoon and stuff, but really you look at Archie and you're like that looks like a freaking cartoon.
Yeah,
these now look more realish, and I think it's a good direction for them to finally go because that's one of the reasons why looking at Archie I always just was like. Really, he's dealing with real problems because he looks like an 8-year-old.
Yeah, well, you know, I think
except
so.
Except for Afterlife. That's badass.
Well, and I think Afterlife opened the door for this. Afterlife with Archie, for those that aren't familiar, is the zombie apocalypse in Riverdale and with all the Archie characters. God, that last issue is still bugging the shit out of me. But, you know, I think that this really does kind of allow them to come in, and I mean, you see Betty drawn there, and she looks freaking hot, man. I'm not, you know, she's
in high school, dude.
Well, if I was in high school and I was a cartoon, yeah, you know, well, maybe it's like a college high school. All right, awkward. Yeah, anyway, that'll be coming out, you know, later. But, you know, Archie's been around for 75 years. So I think doing something like this every once in a while is worth it.
Yeah, new updates are usually good. Another person that's getting an update, Spider-Woman, Jessica Drew, after 37 years, is finally getting a new outfit.
Yeah.
And I can't believe that she's been drawn this. Everyone has new outfits. Like, that's like one of the big things besides an event or someone dying is, ooh, new suit. I wonder what it can do. And that she's had the same one pretty much her entire career is interesting to say the least.
I'm just trying to think of a character that hasn't had a costume change.
Like even Superman has had it change-ish a little bit.
Well, yeah. Well, with New 52, you know, it was more like business casual. He got to wear jeans, you know, with his cape and shit. But yeah, I'm just trying to think who hasn't had a costume makeover. And I mean, because even Hulk had like, you know, a costume thing, like when there was like this, World War Hulk or yeah. Whatever it was.
And, well, he's gotten rid of just the pants and now has like the cybernetic kind of looking yeah. things too. So yeah, he's even had.
And I'm like, I don't know of anybody that looks exactly the same now that they did then. So,
Batman's gone through different. Yeah, so I don't know, but this is very contemporary. It's more of a street smart, you know, walk around jacket that can then be put on, and she can have little wings come out of it, so she can fly. And
it looks cool. And Chris Anka did the concept art on this that Marvel released. I think it looks great. I will say, though, my personal opinion, I think it might be a little too much like Batgirl. The brand new Batgirl that just came out, which I love it. I love the new Batgirl look, but that's what this reminds me of. It's like, okay. I don't know. It's very Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as well, though.
Yeah, and here's the thing I really like is, like, the concept art of, like, the glasses where they're just some shades, and then you push a button, and it becomes more of a mask on her head, which is cool. But that makes me think of, I don't think I've really ever seen her out of her costume in any situation. Like, she's always seems to be in the costume. So this is kind of refreshing to see a face under the mask. So,
yeah, it's, I don't know, we'll take a peek and see, but I'm wondering if Chris Anka is going to be drawing her, because if I remember correctly, Greg Land is doing the art on that book, that new Spider-Woman book that just came out. So I wonder if Chris Anka just only did the concept, or if he's going to be taking over.
Yeah, book. I don't know, actually, no, yeah, because it's, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, Tony, what else did you have in there?
Well, this is an interesting thing that I didn't know was going on because I don't really read Superman, is Greg Pak is trying to create a Joker-like thing for Superman. Not thing, but being. Whereas no one can deny Joker is Batman's main villain person with all those other ones that he fights. Superman doesn't really have that. He has multiple different, you know, facets of his character that he fights in battles all the time, whether it be Bizarro, whether it be Zod, whether it be Metallo. Which one of those is his, you know, kryptonite? See what I did there?
It's not an analogy when you're using the actual...
I know, but...
The actual thing.
Like just that, popped that, in my head.
That is his kryptonite.
One of the things, this is happening, shut up, I'm going to keep going. This is happening in the main pages of Superman right now, and or Batman and Superman, where he's been investigating Lobo, and I started thinking, well, is this, then Lobo's kind of a clownish, even though now he's more of a...
Metro clown?
Well...
He's a metrosexual clown.
Right? Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think the old Lobo could be a real Joker, but I don't even think that's what they're really going for as far as just chaotic whatever. It's more or less who is that person that can be...
Well, and it can't really be Lex now because Lex is, you know,
yeah,
doing good stuff, kind of.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Back in the day, that would have been, but I don't see it anymore. And I think that's a great story arc for Lex, too, to kind of move beyond the having to need to find out, you know, who Superman is, or have Lex do other crazy shit. He doesn't need to always be constantly fucking with Superman.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I find that to be a very interesting story arc, and I might have to start checking that book out.
Yeah. There was one, and I can't pull it up right now on my tablet for some reason, but the speaking of DC, they're doing a whole bunch of variants, which normally I dog on the variants because I think it's just it's a cash grab and it's a ploy. But when you do something cool,
gotta give them credit.
Yeah, and there's only one cover in here that I wasn't happy about their choice, you know, as far as what it was. But DC is doing a whole bunch of variants based on movies.
Well, not just movies, but the movie covers.
Or movie posters.
Posters, yeah.
Yeah, which is awesome. I mean, like, the one in there from Westworld, I remember, was, like, just really fucking cool. And Tony, you're going to have to, you know, kind of help me out and list off a few of them.
Justice League United, be Mars Attacks. We have, oh, fuck, now I'm forgetting the damn name of it. The Teen Titans, which is the vampire movie.
The Lost Boys.
Lost Boys, yeah.
That's the one that I was not that thrilled with. And my only reason was is that there was already an Uncanny X-Force.
That did the same thing, yeah.
Same one, and that's why I was like, oh.
I like the Wonder Woman, which is the 300.
Yeah.
Which that kind of fits.
The Aquaman Free Willy one cracked me up, though.
Yeah.
Like, that one just... The one that surprised me the most, though, was the Batman cover with the Joker on it mimicking the mask. Because how, like, that just seems weird because the mask is already a comic book that was from Dark Horse. So how did they get the rights to do that? The Batgirl Purple Rain is fucking hilarious with Batman standing in the doorway in the background.
I do like the Superman with him and, was it Doomsday, I think it is? The Bill and Ted, like,
oh yeah,
that's just like a fun, like, so these are really great in what they did. I had saw this like a week ago and thought some random, you know, artist just messing around. Damn, I didn't know these were real covers coming out.
Yeah, the Dave Johnson Catwoman cover that's mimicking the Steve McQueen movie Bullet is just awesome. The Flash and the North by Northwest, and I'm like, they got some classic fucking movie posters in here.
Justice League Dark, which is perfect fit for the Beetlejuice cover.
Yeah,
I think just nails it.
Yeah, the oh crap, hang on, the Grayson cover, which is like the Enter the Dragon Bruce Lee movie. That one's fucking awesome. But yeah, these are all shown on Digital Spy, guys. So if you guys want to go take a peek at these, you can really enjoy some of these. You know, the one Superman comic too that was Superfly. Did you see that one? It's near the bottom. It's, you know, your the Superman Superfly.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. Just total 1970s. You know, bullshit. But yeah, it's fantastic. So. And for you ladies, there's the Justice League Magic Mike cover too. So, yeah. All right. What else was there, Tone?
Well, speaking of Beetlejuice.
Ah, yeah. Beetlejuice 2. I didn't know that they were actually making this.
Well, yes, they are 100% going to make it. I know right now. Tim Burton's confirmed that Winona Ryder is going to be coming back as Olivia. I haven't heard anything yet of Michael Keaton.
Yeah, I don't know.
That to me, I don't see another person playing that part. And for me, I mean, Michael Keaton's been in a lot of things that I think he's an awesome actor. I, as a kid, never knew that was him. I thought it was some crazy, funny man, you know, person. I don't see anyone else doing that.
Yeah, that's that definitely is a big question, so we'll have to see. But
I like that Tim Burton, who created the first one, is on board to do this, so you are having at least one of the main characters coming back now that hopefully will come together as everyone will want to get involved and do it and make it a good proper sequel and not one of those, oh, you look different. Yeah, okay, let's keep going type thing.
Yeah, just, you know, just be careful around the set. Don't leave your socks laying around because they might come up missing. What? She got caught stealing socks.
Oh, yeah. I was like, I don't remember that in Beetlejuice. What the fuck are you talking about?
You're looking at me like going, okay, Derek, yeah, sure. I don't think we mentioned this, but CM Punk, a while back, it was announced that he's writing he's going to co-write, I guess it was, the Thor annual that's coming out. And that's going to be like his first, you know, foray into the comic book industry, at least full force. It's well known that he's been a huge comic book fan his entire life. Vertigo now has announced that he's going to be part of the team, which there's a ton of people that are going to be involved as far as both writing and drawing. Strange Sports Stories, number one, by Vertigo. And it's tons of different people doing it, but CM Punk is actually one of the people that's going to be writing one of the stories in there. A couple other names that are in there that you know, I thought were worth noting. Brian Azzarello, Ben McCool, Lee Loffridge, Nick Dergoda, you know, just a couple guys that just popped out to me right off the top that I'm like, oh, I'm really excited to see this. So, yeah, that one, I don't know when it's coming out. But March 18th, I take it back, I do know.
One thing, just to go with Punk, is he's recently gotten out of wrestling and joined UFC.
Oh, yeah, and he wants to fight the Green Ranger.
No, the Green Ranger wants to fight him.
No,
is it the other way around?
Yeah. CM Punk has a standing invitation for Jason David Frank to throw down with him.
See, seeing Jason David Frank, the guy, he knows what he's doing. Besides being a Mighty Morphin Power Ranger, like, he legit, you know, can do ninja shit and talks to Zordon every day. That's going to be I want to see that fight. I would actually, I don't watch UFC, but.
Isn't Frank in the mixed martial arts stuff?
Like, yeah, he's been his whole life.
Yeah. So.
So I look at a person like CM Punk, who's been a wrestler, sure in shape, but I don't know. That's going to be a one-sided match.
Who's that giant-ass dude?
Oh, yeah.
That Brian something?
Brock Lesnar.
Brock Lesnar, yeah. That he went from.
Wrestling to there,
and he's now back into the wrestling again. But he did very well.
But he's also fucking huge and scary.
Well, yeah, he is. Like his neck is wider than his head, which I don't understand how that's possible.
Which is wider than my waist, which I don't know.
All right, a little bit more DC news. With this whole convergence thing coming up. There's a bunch of titles getting canceled, and, you know, a lot of this has to do with them moving from New York to California, you know, and timing things out, and I'm sure things are going to come back, but the ones that we heard about through comicbook.com that are getting canceled so far, Secret Origins, Star Spangled War Stories featuring G.I. Zombie, Green Lantern Corps, Green Lantern, New Guardians, Red Lanterns, Aquaman and the Others, Clarion, Trinity of Sin, World's Finest, Arkham Manor, Batwoman, Swamp Thing, and Infinity Man and the Forever People. And then there's also some quote-unquote final issue solicitations for Batman Eternal, The New 52, Futures End, Earth 2, World's End, and Injustice, Gods Among Us, Year 3. But those last ones, as comicbook.com notes, those were already expected to end.
Yeah, the big surprise here to me is pretty much the Lantern books.
Yeah, cleaning house on the Lanterns.
Like, I don't know what that means, if they're just going to come together and have one cohesive book. And that's because with some of the Batman, you know, titles too, taking off some of their Bat Family books, if they're more or less looking at, let's do some more just Batman and have stories involved with them and less of the family. But,
well, with yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, books like Swamp Thing, we know Charles Soule had been writing that, and he is now, you know, he's finished up that run, but he is now exclusive to Marvel. So, yeah, do you want to stop it and bring it back out later, or do you want to try and continue? And maybe it's that they couldn't find a writer to pick up from where Soule is leaving off. Then again, maybe there's something fairly climactic at the end of his story arc that was pre-planned.
See, that's what I hope for some of these. I know it's not going to be the case for all of these. Some of them just poor sales. But I like when there's actually a good ending to, without having to have someone die, but, you know, have them be like, okay, now we can wait a year to hear the rest of this story, when it gets picked back up or what's going on. Like, but like I said, with the Lantern universe, that was such a high-selling book when Geoff Johns was on it. And it's kind of sad to hear the news, whether this will try to get him to come.
Well, I tried picking up even Green Lantern stuff for a while, like, you know, when they had the Simon Baz character. excuse me. And, yeah, I mean, like, I'm probably more interested in Green Lantern than I am any other DC character, because at least that one, like, you can kind of relate, because they're humans that got powers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, I don't know. There's one other thing, Tony, here that I wanted to talk to you about, which you brought to my attention, and I kind of cut you off during post-production or pre-production shit, that there's a new event, if you will, but this one, it's more of a crossover than an event, in my opinion, because events, now at least from what I've seen. This is Guardians of the Galaxy and X-Men, The Black Vortex. And I'm more curious about this for one reason. The whole argument that Marvel is doing nothing to promote X-Men because Fox owns the movie rights. You're taking your most popular movie, I think, to date for Marvel with Guardians and pairing them up with X-Men. That doesn't sound like something that you're doing to drive the X-Men sales down.
No, and I mean, they've already kind of have that connection now that Peter is kind of dating Kitty.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
I told you, I dropped my X-Men.
Yeah, and that's a bigger surprise from when you said you're going to do that 2 years ago, and then you kept reading because it did get better, and then...
Well, yeah, but they didn't resurrect Jean Grey. They brought Jean Grey back from the past. That's when I said I would drop it if they brought her back to life again.
But, yeah, so there's been... I really haven't been picking up X-Men at all either, but obviously I pick up Guardians. And, yeah, there's even been a couple times within Guardians that he's had, like, a viewing monitor to her back on Earth and saying that they want to... So, obviously, their next story arc is going to wrap up at some point, and they're going to head back to Earth. I want to know what this Black Vortex is.
Yeah, I don't. I'll let you tell me about it later. All right, I think that's going to do it for us on news, unless you had anything else sitting out there.
No, I don't. That's about it for news this week.
Okay. Actually, you know what? There is one thing that I just wanted to mention briefly. There's a comic book coming out of India called Priya's Shakti, and it's free on Comixology. This is... I'm more interested in this because it shows what comic books, I think, in the medium can actually do on how they can help break barriers and whatnot. But this is a rape victim, the hero of the book, if you will, or the main central character of the story. She's a rape victim in India, which rape there and rape here, two completely different things as far as the
punishment social. For the person, this and that.
This is a really, really interesting thing, you know, where sexual harassment and violence are addressed, and also to be able to see the differences in cultures too. We have a long way to come here as well, but you know, I do think that there's no way to say this where it's right, but it's better here. I hope listeners understand what I'm saying. I'm not saying there's anything good about rape, but...
It's worse there.
It's worse there. Thank you. I like the fact that comic books can do more than just be entertainment. That they can bring about a heightened awareness of situations and hopefully help create change just through knowledge. So... if you guys are interested, like I said, it's free on Comixology. You guys can go check it out. It's a hard topic to talk about because it's very sensitive, and I don't want to trip over my own tongue and say something accidentally.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm just going to stop now before I accidentally become stupid.
All right. Well, I have something just because I wanted to mention it to have your discussion quickly, because why not? I just watched The Wolverine the other day.
I'm not familiar with that movie.
The one where, I mean, that adamantium can just get sucked out of his bones. And
not familiar with that movie at all.
And random things can just be on your heart. And all I want to do is say, I want that fucking bed that dude was on.
Yeah. Yeah, that was awesome.
Ah, got you to say that you mentioned it. No, but that bed was pretty sweet. That's about the only cool thing in that movie.
Yeah.
I do not like Robot, Silver Samurai. The whole, the ending just killed me. And
yeah,
I know that listeners have probably watched this movie a long time ago, and there's no need to bring it back up, but I just had to get it out there in the open.
I know a lot of people that really, really liked it. Although, actually, you know what I like most about it? Is that the X-Men Days of Futures Past... wiped it clean.
I will say I did like the post credits. Had I watched The Wolverine to see that before even knowing about Days of Futures Past and having seen that movie, that would have gotten me stoked for the movie even more, knowing that that's going to be happening.
Yeah.
So watching it after the fact, I'm like, oh, this was kind of cool. That was the only cool part about it, but...
Yeah, but I still want my 2 hours back and my $8. But anyway, all right. Time for a little Indie Turnpike?
Yes, let's do it.
All right. This one, another Image book this week. This is Rumble, number one. And I normally, like I said, I was going to try and stay away from a lot of number ones, but this is... created by John Arcudi and James Herron. Dave Stewart did amazing colors on this. Chris Eliopoulos did the letters.
Here's something that I kind of want to start doing now with new books. How does the title portray the book? Like, Rumble, for me, just seeing that makes me think of, like, a car revving up. Does it have anything to do with cars?
No, and okay. It doesn't have anything to do with boxing in Vegas, with Let's Get Ready to... Rumble! Yeah, no. I honestly don't know what the title has to do with the book.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know a lot of what's going on in this book.
Okay.
Here's what I can tell you. There's a town... I'm doing a Kevin review right now. There's a town, and there's a dumb guy that works like in this bar, and there's an old black man in it, and then there's this scarecrow straw man ninja that comes in, and he cuts the old black man's arm off. And then,
like, he's a real, like, from Wizard of Oz straw type scarecrow
guy in the cover.
Okay,
yeah, that's, he's actually looking. Made out of straw, because when dumb guy Billy, I think is his name, in the bar goes to help, he takes a ball bat and he hits Scarecrow in the head, and it just goes poof, and straw comes out, and he's dead.
Oh, okay.
So that's about what I want to tell you about the story. I don't have a fucking clue what's going on. But it's interesting. More so interesting, why I wanted to bring this up, is James Herron's artwork. Because this is a scary, gruesome story, but it's drawn almost like a kid's cartoon. There's a little Ren and Stimpy.
Yeah, I can see that. Especially like almost the first, like the Paul Bunyan land and...
Well, and when you see the face of the old black man in there, turn the page, you'll see that. And then flip a few more pages, you're going to see the old lady with big glasses and her cat. This is, like, if anybody remembers, what was the show on NBC years ago that had, like Amazing Stories?
Okay.
Remember that show?
No, but...
Okay, Amazing Stories was, like, a Steven Spielberg thing. Where they had all these crazy different things that would come to life. There are a couple of very famous ones. One in particular is called The Family Dog, and it was an all animated. And I think this was the first, one of the first adult feature length cartoons to be shown, you know, on network television. Very over exaggerated style, and that's what Herron's artwork. Is in here is very over exaggerated.
Well, yeah, because like these demons, even like scary but not scary because they're cartoony, but I think they're scary, but
yeah,
it's weird.
And I guess the main reason I had to talk about this book was the fucking artwork. I mean, it's off putting, but I love it, and I can't, like it. This book is so fucking unique. Because of the fact that you've got this story that's a very, it actually is a scary story, you know, horror-esque story. I don't know if I'd actually call it scary. But drawn in that cartoonish way, it leaves you feeling uneasy.
Mm-hmm.
But it works. And so I guess that's why I wanted to mention it. So Rumble number one from Image Comics. That's it for Indie Turnpike.
So, all right, let's quick do booze in the book.
All right, well, quick booze in a book.
It doesn't need to be that quick, but...
Well, it's going to be.
Okay.
So, last night, I was getting some beer to take home after the hockey game, and I remembered one that we had when we went to the
beer festival.
Beer festival 5 months ago, and it's from Oddside Ales, which is that's a Michigan beer. It's actually out of Grand Haven, Michigan, out right on Lake Michigan, and it's their Bean Flicker, which, you know, Bean Flicker has another connotation, but then again, we've also done the Pearl Necklace on here too. Bean Flicker is a blonde ale made with coffee. And, you know, the commercial description is a light coffee note with gentle grains. It's not light. It's like drinking coffee. It's delicious. Yeah. Like, it's...
I don't like coffee, and I really don't like coffee-flavored beers, but I enjoy this one.
Yes.
Yeah. It's weird, but it's, I mean, it's good.
Now, I will say it's more of a light beer as far as flavor and drinkability compared to, like, a lot of times, you know, like the Kona Brown that I drink from Perrin, you know, that's a heavier beer. This is not heavy at all. It's only a 4.5% alcohol by volume on there, but I'm pairing Bean Flicker with Witches number 3 from Image Comics, so it's an all Image week for me this week. Written by Scott Snyder, art by Jock, and Matt Hollingsworth does the colors on that. And I'm pairing these two together because Bean Flicker, as far as the title, has nothing to do with witches or anything like that. But it's just scary how good both of these are. So, you know, it's... Go grab them. But that's it.
All right. You got anything for last call?
Just a few.
Okay, because I will tell you, I have just a few, too. I believe next week is going to be a break-me week because this week I only had 3 titles. Really? I even looked and being like, what else is there that I'm interested in? I just didn't see anything at my shop this week. Of course, we are going later, so I may pick up something else, but Axis Inhuman.
That's just Inhuman.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Or
well,
is that...
Well, it's part of... I'm saying it's the Inhuman number 10. She's still being a witch of a person, but I liked how that kind of went. The other one that was really good is Guardians of the Galaxy number 22. As their story arc is supposed to be going to the symbiote homeworld, it was really interesting seeing the Venom suit go on to Groot. So you have a Venomish Groot fauna looking flower Venom, and then
I want to see a Venom rocket.
It happened in this, and then at the end of it, it goes on Drax, who is probably the strongest of all of them, and it kind of just ends there. So all I know is this thing wants to take over the ship. It's not trying to necessarily hurt any of them, but it obviously needs a host. And it's just saying, you know, get out of the ship or whatever, leave. So it needs to go somewhere. It probably is going to be taking them to the symbiote home planet. But it was very interesting to just see other Venom-type things, and it's really cool.
Okay. I had Wayward number 5. Still really enjoying this book. You know, it's not a book that I thought I would hang on with that long. I liked issue 1, but I don't know. I didn't assume I would hang on. I've short attention span sometimes. So, The Bunker number 8. Jesus, this book. Just so good. Little Depressed Boy. And, probably one of my, the one that every time I see come out, I'm like, hell yeah! Bob's Burgers. This comic book is just fucking awesome. Like, it's just great. So, Tina's Erotic Friend Fiction wins again as the best story in it every fucking month.
How would you compare it to an episode? Like, do you feel like it's almost like an episode watching the show?
Nope, not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. It's, which... You know, it the characters are all true to form. They act like they would normally, but it's more of just expanding on little idiosyncrasies. And so, you know, because there's multiple stories in here, but there's always, you know, a Tina story. There's always, you know, there's always, like, well, obviously with Tina's Erotic Friend Fiction, There's always like a Louise story. There's always a Jean story in there. So there's always something with the kids. And then like Bob always has his burger of the day ideas in there, which are great. And this one, it was book burgers. So there was like the bun also rises, the Leo Toll soy burger, which is a soy burger with Russian dressing. You know, Brian and Bunishment burger. You know, it's just ketchup in the rye burger served on rye bread.
Something I found out about the show is at the beginning when there's always that, there's a van in opening credits, there's a van in, when it always say like re-grand opening or whatever, that van switches the name of whatever it is in almost every episode.
Really?
You know what I'm talking about? And then in the burger place, and it even switches sometimes during the show, I found out, where it has the burger of the day, some kind of burger pun or something like that. Yeah. But that sometimes, that's not always the same thing. Like, that switches too throughout the episodes. And I'm like, those are the small little cool things that I laugh at because they're not pointed out unless you find some internet forum that says, oh, yeah, check out all these.
Well, what's his name? John H. Benjamin, the guy that does the voice of Bob, also does the voice of Archer. Did you see the Archer?
Yeah, I love Archer, and yeah, that was an awesome
episode. Yeah, where he thought he was Bob, and oh god, that was just fucking hilarious. Yeah, that's an awesome one. Also, people that are fans of his should go look up Lucy, Daughter of the Devil. I know it's
I forgot about that show. That was hilarious.
Yeah, he played Satan. He played the devil.
Okay, yep.
And yeah, my favorite episode still is the Escapeoki. It was karaoke with DJ Jesus, you know, and
he
gets in the, like, you know, they're gonna put him in the fish tank and the in chains and the straight jacket, and then all of a sudden he pops up in the back of the in the back of the room while Bob's up there singing Running with the Shadows of the Night, you know, the Pat Benatar song or whatever, and DJ Jesus is back there like, we're running with the shadows of the night. Yeah, it's awesome. So, all right, well, that's fucking off topic, but yeah. All right, well, let's drink some more beer and go hop the bus down to the comic shop, because I don't think any of us should be driving at this point.
All right.
Oh, wait, we'll call the girlfriend.
Listeners, keep reading your comic books, and we'll be back next week to talk to you about them then.
See you guys. And Merry Christmas!